Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners come to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth. With your hosts, financial and wealth building experts, Christian Allen and Rod Zabriskie.
Welcome into today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast, where we teach you how to invest with benefits. My name's Christian Allen. I'm here with my co-host, Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. What's up, Rod?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you?
I couldn't be any better.
Wow, I love to hear it.
Couldn't be any better. And you want to know why, Rod?
I do want to know why.
Because we're going to talk today about the lifeblood of wealth creation, aka cash flow.
The day has come.
Yep. Today's episode
is here.
Is cash flow the lifeblood of wealth creation? So, Rod, do we have any big announcements or anything interesting going on in your life that the listeners have to know about before we move into the meat of today's show?
I feel like we're in a good place here in the Zabriskie household, but nothing like amazing to share.
Is that a new Money Insights pullover you're rocking today?
It is.
Nice. I like it. It looks good. It's a new color. I'm digging it, Rod.
Yeah, I like it too.
Okay. Well, nice work. Okay. Well, if that's the case, then glad everybody's well. Let's move into the lifeblood of wealth creation, right?
Let's do it.
So maybe the starting point, not maybe, the starting point is always for us to define and make sure that everybody clearly understands what is cash flow according to Rod Zabriskie.
Okay. Well, cash flow, as people may know, is just the flow of cash. However,
brilliant. Thank you, Rod.
Specific to the context.
It's all cleared up now.
Yeah. I was hoping to get that done quickly. But in the context of what we're talking about here, it is an individual who invests in order to create cash flow. And I need to describe maybe other ways that people invest to clarify that, because sometimes people invest, you have an opportunity to buy a piece of vacant land and you're going to hang on to it for the next 30 years. It's not doing anything for you until they are putting the new freeway off ramp right there. And now you're ready to sell it, right? That would be an appreciation based investment completely, because you're getting zero income in the short term. It's all about what happens later. This, however, when we talk about cash flow, is the opposite. You are investing in order to create a stream of income, or in multitude of different investments, streams of income. And we do it in the context that in the long term, the goal is to get to a place where we create enough passive income to replace the active income so that we can have the freedom to do whatever we want to do. Walk away from the job, work when we want, play when we want. It's all on our own terms.
When we talk about cash flow, I think we have to define the fact that we're talking about net money that comes in. There is a difference between income and cash flow.
Great point.
Here's the deal though, Rod. I think sometimes people misunderstand what that is, right? They think, okay, hey, I go out and I do something, I create. Well, okay, so your job is an example, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Technically, your job brings in whatever cash flow it is. Everything that comes in is technically cash flow. But when you're talking about an investment, you have to consider the expenses that you're incurring along the way as well.
Yep.
So in other words, if I go out and I buy a single family home and I'm able to create $2,500 of rent money that comes in, and my loan is $1,800 a month, and then I've got insurance and some other fees, it might be that my actual cash flow is $400 a month, as an example, even though I've created more initial income. So I just wanted to make sure we clarify what cash flow actually is and what it actually
is. And the term I would use for that is the net cash flow, or sometimes people call that your free cash flow. Because the $2,100 got locked up.
So are you saying the other is considered cash flow?
It is. Well, it's okay. So when you have that,
that's a tricky line, my friend. Because if you're like, hey, I got a couple million dollars of cash flow, you're like, yeah, I mean, I'm putting out like 3 million to get in two, but I'm okay. So there, so I guess in my mind, I think that when people are talking about cash flow, generally, they're not talking about total income. They're talking about money that's coming in unencumbered of whatever the expenses or loan that's, you know, needing to be repaid on that property.
I would sure hope so, because that's really where the focus needs to be.
Okay. The other, so either way, the other matters, either way, that's the important part.
Like the other matters, the $2,500 a month coming in is critical, because if you don't get the $2,500, you don't get the net $400. But yes, as it relates to the whole concept of replacing your working income with passive income, it's really just the $400 that matters in that example, for sure.
Okay, cool. So here's the next question, Rod. Why is cash flow, why would we say that cash flow is the lifeblood of wealth creation? What's the role of cash flow? Why is it important?
Yeah, well, in the earlier example I gave where someone buys a piece of property and they're just going to sit on it for years, if that is the extent of their wealth creation, then they have to wait for years before they realize any benefit from it. Whereas on the other hand, they buy a piece of property. In your recent example, the $2,500 a month, that property is in over time, on average, going to be appreciating in value as well. And it's creating that income for you. It's doing both. So as it relates to wealth creation that's meaningful now, that's helping me to grow and create this kind of snowball of wealth creation, cash flow is the lifeblood, because that's the value coming back to me now that I can be socking away and then putting into something else instead of waiting for whatever event that happens in the future that is not entirely out of my control, but the factors that would make me want to sell, a lot of those factors are out of my control. And whereas the cash flow is very much in my control, especially if I go in building it that way.
Right. It's the seed money. It's the seed money, right? It's the basis for what allows us to save, to build up really each part of our financial foundation, right? We need cash flow in order to pay for important insurances to protect our assets, to be smart in the way that we deal with our taxes, like across the, and then of course, in order to save and invest, we need some sort of cash flow in order to continue to do that. Now, that's not to say that an appreciation play can't be really valuable, but to your point, you probably can't run exclusively on appreciation investment plays. You're probably going to have some combination of both. And if you're leaning more heavily one way or the other, you're probably wiser to lean cash flow, because that again is the seed money, which then allows you to do more and more and more. And so from that standpoint, it kind of makes sense that it's like, again, you can't even create your safety net. I can't build my opportunity fund or my emergency fund if I don't have income and cash flow that allows me to do all of that.
I would go so far as to say that if it's an appreciation only play, then it fits more into that nest egg category that we talk about, where people like the traditional retirement narrative, where you're just building up a nest egg so that you can turn that into a stream of income at some point in the future.
That's true. That is 100% true. But in the alternative investment space, it's even worse, right? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is just that your example, at least inside of like, you know, IRAs and, you know, even or brokerage accounts and things like that, it's like liquid enough that I could get to it if I needed to.
Yep.
If it was like I'm like investing exclusively in land. Now, if you're really good at it, right, then maybe there's some exceptions to this rule. But if you're investing in things that are illiquid and long-term like that for appreciation, mm-hmm. that's going to be a really, really tough road to hoe, at least until you have a baseline of comfortable cash flow that allows you the freedom and flexibility to decide whether you want to do that kind of thing.
Yeah. And we're not here to say that you shouldn't have any appreciation-based investing. We're just saying that as it relates to cash flow, the lifeblood of wealth creation, that appreciation play isn't doing this. Like, we're just trying to really create a clear line between the two.
Okay. So you talk to people every day, Rod, mm-hmm. and you probably hear many places that cash flow comes from, but what would you say are the most common sources that people are getting cash flow from?
Yeah, probably not a surprise that number one is real estate in a lot of different forms. Buying your own properties and actually managing them yourselves. You're the landlord, single family homes or even multifamily or even commercial, right? We have a lot of people who maybe it's a dentist who owns the building and then has three other tenants that he leases space to, and that creates some cash flow. So real estate in a lot of forms. And then obviously in a person's business, there's cash flow that comes from that. Not only what they pay themselves, like, hey, what am I taking in quote unquote salary, but then additional distributions or additional ways that value comes out of it that fits into this category of cash flow. And then beyond those two, like, I think those are the number one and number two. Beyond that, there are a lot of different ways that we see it. We talk about ATM funds. We talk about other like mortgage funds and things like that, that create a very predictable, they'll often call it a preferred rate. Say it's a preferred 9% rate. And then any additional profit that comes off of the inside of the business, then you may get some additional of that. But again, creating this predictable income. And then even stuff like hard money lending or other things like that, that maybe isn't as much long-term. A lot of times that's a 3-month cycle or a 6 or 12 month cycle where the money's out and then it comes back quickly. But either way, I mean, if you can create a 10%+ return off of something like that, those are the kinds of things that we also see people doing.
Okay, so let's lock in and talk about real estate and maybe some of the ways that we see that happening. Because obviously there's a lot of ways to invest in real estate, right?
Yep.
We just gave examples of using like a raw land deal versus maybe just like a single family rental property.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously those look very different, but we see people who do a lot of syndication investing.
Yep.
Maybe describe how that looks in comparison to what like just purchasing a single family home would look like. And maybe you will talk about the pros and cons of both types of cash flow, because we haven't really been emphasizing like the amount of time, effort, energy that goes into it. We're just kind of basically saying, calling all cash flow, cash flow. Sure. Maybe just hit on those couple things.
Yeah. So first off, a syndication is basically where you are able to participate in a large investment, but you're a small portion of that. And the people who are kind of putting things together, they're called general partners. They're the ones that are actually out, you know, putting an offer on the property. They're arranging for the loan. They're gathering capital from several different sources. And typically that comes through what are called limited partners, which just means that you're not participating in the operations of the property. You're just contributing capital so that the general partners have what they need to then make things happen, which has its pros and cons, right? On the one hand, the reason a lot of people do it is because it is very much passive. As a limited partner, not only are they not asking you to participate, they don't want you to participate in the operations. They just want your money. And you're, for someone who's looking for that, who's looking to say, well, I want to invest in real estate, I just don't want to become the landlord, they're wanting that passive role. And so that's probably the biggest pro and the reason why a lot of people participate in this type of thing. Now, one of the cons would just be that you give up control, right? You're handing your money over to someone else, trusting that they're going to do something smart with it. But again, control is given up. Whereas if you're the landlord, you keep that control, you keep doing that. But to your point, it's trading that time, because in order for me to have that control, I have to be willing to put in more of the time, not only in the actual like running day to day, but in the decision making on the front end. I'm managing my own debt on the property, all of those things. And so it's a much more active role. So going back to our definition, if our goal is to get to a place where we create enough passive income to replace our working income, then I would say that if all of your income is coming from single family rentals and you are actually the landlord, you're acting in that role, you don't have some sort of management organization that's doing that for you, then you've just traded jobs, right? You walked away from your other job, but now you've replaced it with another one because you actually have to show up and, you know, make things happen.
Now, the good news is you've traded jobs, but you have created control. So it's almost like it's like a step, right? If you were to take the cash flow quadrant, it's a step in the right direction toward becoming an investor, right?
Yep.
So there is a difference between going to work, but to your point, you still have to be the one there in the business doing the work. And that's an important distinction for sure.
Yep.
Okay. So I think one of the things I don't want to suggest is that the one is necessarily better than the other in terms of how to manage a real estate property, right? Or so, like you said, there's syndication investing, there's passive investing, and that is oftentimes extremely attractive for a high income, high pay, you know, someone that's making a lot of money in their actual job, right? And maybe they like it and want to stay there, or maybe it's something they're planning to do for at least the foreseeable future, potentially moving out at some future time. But for that person, that could look really attractive, but there are downsides to it. And I would say the biggest downside is that you're paying somebody else to do that stuff that you would otherwise need to be doing. And therefore, I would say on average, your ability to profit has at least the potential to be lower. Now, I say that realizing that if you're not like somebody who knows how to, you know, find and pick out real estate deals, then you still might be like just way more profitable on the syndication side of things. But again, it's not to suggest that one's better or worse than the other. It's just that they're different, and it's important to understand that passive cash flow can still look very different than that the cash flow that you're having to get up every day and put your blood, sweat, and tears into.
Yeah. And there is a version that is kind of somewhere in between. A lot of people think of this as like the granddaddy of passive income, and it's called the triple net lease, where basically you have a company who doesn't want to own their own real estate, but they're very stable, very consistent. They're signing like 30-year leases. And so if you own that property and they're basically handling everything in terms of like they manage their own space, they always talk about the toilet clogging or whatever is the landlord. If you have to come in, well, in that triple net lease, you're the landlord, but you don't have to come and fix that. They fix their own, right? They take care of all of that themselves. So going back to the syndications are usually on a shorter cycle. They're often on a 3 to 5 to 7 year turnaround, where in a syndication, it may create some consistent cash flow to you, but the cycle of the investment includes the sale of it in, again, that 3, 5, 7, whatever the time frame is that they go in planning on. And so, yes, you've created consistent income, but then there comes a point in time where now you have to make a new decision, due diligence, do all the different things to get into a new investment with that cash because they sold that property. They sent it back. You hope you got a good return from it in addition to the cash flow you were receiving, but you have to be somewhat like from time to time getting back in and being active in making that money work for you again on the next cycle. Whereas the triple net lease, because they last for long periods of time, there's less of that.
And this may be a good time to ask this question, Rod. What is the value of cash flow, particularly like triple net lease cash flow would be probably perfect during this time, but what's the value of cash flow in a down market?
Yeah, it's a great question because depending on what created that down market could create different triggers depending on what you've invested in. So this most recent technically we didn't have a recession, but there are a lot of investors out there who have been suffering as it relates to the higher interest rates. Sure. And they invested in a syndication, depending on how the syndicator handled the debt portion of what they were doing, makes a huge difference on how people are feeling currently in their investments for that. So, but a similar thing could have happened. Like if you were a commercial property owner and COVID hits and people can't pay their, there's no revenue, they can't pay their lease, then what are you going to do? Right. So, and this gets back to just our kind of our, one of our core principles that we often talk about in terms of diversification. We truly mean diversifying across different risk profiles. So another thing that we've seen recently with the high interest rates, if people were so much into one category, so for example, multifamily real estate, investing with a provider who maybe they were buying rate caps, but maybe they weren't, didn't have rate caps, and all of a sudden interest rates go up and they just have to float with them, that creates a lot of problems. And if you were too concentrated in just that one category, then you felt it, I mean, on everything, as opposed to if you were a little more diversified, you had a little here, you had a little there, multifamily, some commercial, mm-hmm. some self-storage or whatever that have different risk profiles, then you're going to feel it on those downturns, but you might feel it differently in one category versus another. And by being disciplined and being diversified, then while you may not be happy about what's happening in that suffering, you know, portion of category that you have other things that make up for that, so that you're not, it's not a spigot that turns off completely, right? You may have less income coming in, but if your income turns off completely and you're relying on that income, you're in real trouble.
Yeah, I think that's well said. So it's not that it suddenly removes all risk of market fluctuation, market downturns, but it certainly is a strong buffer against those types of things. Again, even when you think about times like 2008, like mm-hmm. Real estate values crashed. And I'm certain that rents went down, but if you were playing for cash flow, you were in a lot better shape than you were if you were trying to turn things around immediately, right?
Yep, absolutely. Okay,
Russ. So one of the things that we talk about in our invest with benefits philosophy is the importance of alternative investing, right? And so if you're somebody that's been primarily in the traditional world and you're listening to this and you're hearing cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, it's kind of like, well, what does that even like mean for me? Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe just help us distinguish the different, or maybe why the alternative side is a focal point and how it relates to cash flow, and maybe just kind of comparing and contrasting traditional versus alternative space, and how cash flow relates to both of those.
Yeah, if you are in the traditional space and you go to your broker and you say, hey, I want to focus my investments on creating streams of income, they're going to say, great, let's do that. And so they're going to put you into that, what they term the income category of
usually bonds
or dividend paying stocks, right? That's really where that exists.
Yeah.
And to them, it's pretty simple. It's like, oh, great. Yeah, you want income? Let's create you some income.
There's an income play right there. It might even be a REIT if you know, who knows?
Sure. Yeah, if they're really getting creative.
Yeah.
But in the alternative space, when you look at the entirety of our invest with benefits framework, cash flow is one of those things. And we love alternative assets because of that, because in the way that we are describing our ability to create income as a business owner, as a real estate investor, investing in notes, syndications, these other things, it's completely different than the bond. So in other words, again, going back to whole risk profile, if your broker says, yeah, let's create you some income and let's use bonds to do it, then you're completely subject to what happens with interest rates and locked in. So if 3 years ago you're having that conversation and your broker says, yeah, great, let's create you some income, great, you're still stuck at your 2% or whatever it was that you got when he bought you that whatever 10-year bond, right?
Hopefully, last year, 5 years ago, no one was buying 10.
I was hoping.
Bonds.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
But to your point, like, if they don't know another way to create income and that's just what's there, then obviously there were people who were locking in, you know, really low interest rate bonds that are, you know, less valuable today than they were.
Yeah. And when they get real creative, they talk about laddering bonds, you know, so don't buy them all today, buy some mm-hmm. today and some in a few months. And anyway, so staggering when you buy them so that you spread that out. But again, either way, you're still just subject to whatever the interest rate is at that point in time determines what the bond is paying out. Whereas in the alternative space, now you can do a whole variety of different things to create the income. And again, I keep stressing that because if your goal is to create enough passive income to replace your active income, you need multiple streams of income coming from multiple directions, multiple, again, categories, different risk profiles for reasons we just talked about. And if you'll do that, then the downturn comes or interest rates get cut or whatever, you've planned for that, right? You have the balancing pieces in place to do that. So that's the first answer to your question. And then the second answer is that we can do things in the alternative space to enhance our income that we can't do in the traditional space, or at least not as easily, without getting more creative. And that includes things like leverage, mm-hmm. right? Dollar for dollar, what I'm putting in, if I'm also leveraging, it increases my cash flow, the percentage, the rate of return, however you want to term it. Another thing is that if I'm able to create tax savings in that, and when I say if, when, or because inside yeah. the alternative space, I'm able to do that, I then it also comes back. So my net cash flow is better as well. So in your example, that if the gross income coming off of that investment was $2,500 a month, netting me out $400, but then I can get creative on, but I have this cost seg, I can have some bonus depreciation, so I pay a whole lot less in taxes this year. That can turn my $400 into $700 a month, right? And then by having used the leverage and anyway, the different pieces allow me to make that better in ways that I can't do in the traditional space.
And I think the broader message is that the six core benefits that we so commonly talk about that primarily exist, or they exist anywhere to an extent, but they're just so much easier to implement inside the alternative space. It's like baked into a lot of what we do, right? And so it just becomes one of those things where, you know, tax savings becomes just part of the equation. Whereas when I buy a bond, most likely it's not, unless I'm doing it inside of a qualified plan, which, you know, we talk about has its own kind of bag of worms that comes with it.
Yeah, or municipal bonds, but then you get a lower rate, or yeah, a lot of different things, but you have to take a whole package that comes
and,
with.
Yeah, and so I think the long and short is utilize the different benefits and do it inside of the alternative space, because when you do, your dollar goes further.
Yep.
And again, that doesn't mean there's never space for you know, to pump money into your defined benefit plan. I couldn't come up with the word, right? Like, I know that there's a lot of physicians and dentists and people with high income that like really appreciate the fact that they have that element. And so it's like, it's not that that's necessarily a bad way to go. It's just that you're going to be happier in the end if you have balanced those things out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Rod, why don't you give us a case study? Is there any examples you can think of of people that we talk to who have used cash flow to kind of create some of the benefits that we've been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one that actually comes to mind is interesting coming off of the comments you just made, because this is someone, and we're going to change names to protect the successful. In this case, we're going to call her Ashley. Is someone who was fully invested on the traditional side, participating in the 401k at work, had a great job, building a pension, you know, different things like this. But 100% of the focus was over there. And then what happened is, like, even though she was successful, you would have put her in that high income, you know, category. When she went through a divorce and all of a sudden they're dividing up all of the assets, then the what was feeling very comfortable in terms of, hey, I'm going to get to a place where I can retire. Now this 50-year-old is sitting there like, oh man, am I going to be able to retire? Right. Yeah. What I was thinking I was going to be able to rely on, half of it's gone and I have a limited time frame to try to replace it. What am I going to do? And so that's when she, almost out of desperation, was started looking around and being like, well, what else is there out there that I can be doing? And that's actually when she found the alternative investment world and started taking steps to create passive streams of income in the alternative space, so that by the time she was about 58, she actually was ready to walk away from her traditional job and become a full-time investor.
So basically, what she did is used a lot of the assets that had been built up in the traditional space over those years, mm-hmm. and found ways to efficiently and effectively convert those. Now, I also want to just put a caveat in there. I always tell people, like, it's not realistic to do that overnight. That's a mm-hmm. process, right? Yep. Like there's tax elements that we have to be considerate of. That's the primary issue. But making that kind of transition, while it's really valuable and important, has to be done with care. In Ashley's case, she was able to do a really nice job. And to be quite honest, the timing was good, because over the last 10, 15 years, you know, all markets have been really good. But, you know, if you were in the passive income space, like, let's face it, this has been the last 15 years has been like the boom of the passive income world, right?
Yeah.
And so while we love the passive income space, like, you also have to be thoughtful and considerate when you're moving there, not only in terms of how we move from traditional to alternative, but we have to be really smart in terms of who we're investing with. Now, we always talk about that, but it just came to my mind, so I had
to. Yeah. Well, and to her credit, she did what we talked about in terms of being diversified across a bunch of different categories, different providers, mm-hmm. so that over the last couple of years, when things have tightened in certain areas, it's not that she hasn't felt that in those areas, but it's that the other stuff has been fine. Like, so she hasn't had any decrease in her income on the whole, as far as like what she's relying on for, you know, day to day. She's been fine.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it is. It's a powerful story. Okay, Rod, any final or closing thoughts on cash flow?
I think, so for me, this is the thing that really brought me into the alternative space, is this idea of we can get to a place where we create enough passive income to replace our working income. And again, that's not the only reason why we do that. There are a lot of other benefits to investing in things that create cash flow. But that's one of the things that has driven me since I was in college and first started, you know, learning about and talking about these things. And so I get really excited about this as a category, as a conversation.
Love it, Rod. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for hanging out with us. If you are going to invest, Rod, make sure to invest with benefits, and that absolutely needs to include cash flow. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, please visit moneyinsights.net. The views and opinions expressed on the Money Insights Podcast are not intended to be individual financial, tax, or legal advice. Always consult with the appropriate advisor before making financial decisions. And if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This will help others find the show and learn wealth-building strategies for themselves. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.